This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right. They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then, something happened.
Oh, good Lord! It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait! There's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Society is breeding a new kind of criminal. It's also breeding a new kind of cop. Meet Cobra. He does the job nobody wants.
Did you use unnecessary deadly force?
I used everything I had.
Do you know you have an attitude problem?
Yeah, but it's just a little one. You think you would recognize me if you saw him again?
The tall one?
Yeah. The one that wants to kill you.
Do what you have to do to get a lead on this maniac.
And if I find him?
Do what you do best.
Stallone is Cobra, the strong arm of the law.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 80, Stallone in Cobra. And apropos that this is 80, because this is the 80s, the era of excess, explosions, reactionary vigilante movies, and
you're the disease, I'm the cure.
Oh, that was awful. I can't do it.
Well, at least you try, okay?
Yeah, I try.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is Cobra from 1986. This is Stallone at his ultimate 80s excess, man. Like, Sylvester Stallone, I love this man. I mean, I grew up worshiping him. I grew up idolizing him. I had a Rocky shrine in my bedroom. Stallone is known for two iconic characters. Rocky Balboa and John Rambo. In my world, there should be a third. And that's Marion Cobretti. Because in this movie, where he plays said character, he is fucking the man, okay? Yeah. I'm not saying he's not,
not
fucking
literally
the man.
Fucking them, no.
He is the man. I mean, you want testosterone? This film is a shot of testosterone, yeah. Man. This is what the 80s was about, man. This is what Stallone in the 80s was about. This is what Cannon Films was about.
Yeah.
This is a Menachem Golan, Yorn Globus production. This movie has got everything you want, man.
And it's kind of ironic that I can't get my voice deep enough for this testosterone boost here. Because, yeah, we got the aviator shades. We got the vigilante
Well, he's a cop. He's a cop. Yeah. I mean, but he plays by his own rules. So
yeah, of course. He's like Serpico, where he has this antagonistic attitude toward his boss. You can't control me. I'm going to do what I want.
Well, and, you know,
he's resented by his higher-ups. Exactly. That's a classic trope.
But he gets results, goddammit!
Yeah.
So, and when this movie begins, it starts off with a Stallone voiceover where he's describing all the crimes that happen in L.A. or San Francisco. And
250 rapes a day. And there's 200 muggings. And whatever.
50 murders. Yeah. But,
and then
apropos of that, we cut to a supermarket in broad daylight. Christmas.
Yeah,
we know it's Christmas. We see a lot of Christmas decorations, although, you know, there's not much else festive about this. And a man walks in to the supermarket, and he is dressed in a peacoat. He's wearing a toque. He's got a pair of shades. Looks like an everyday garden variety hipster.
Yes,
but he's not
a badass stash as well.
A badass stash. You got it. But there's more to it than him, because he is a member of the New World. Not the New World Order. Not NWO. No. Just a New World. And he's there to cause shit, man.
Yeah, and then this hostage-taking scene is juxtaposed with an empty warehouse of guys doing, like, the YMCA dance with axes above their heads.
Which is fucking awesome, but anyway. It's
really badass.
Yeah.
And they're tapping the axes above their heads and doing this weird, sort of vaguely fascistic calisthenics dance in this warehouse.
Yeah.
And so I guess, this hostage taker.
Yeah, this guy comes in there and he just starts blasting willy-nilly. He pulls out his shotgun and he starts blowing away the shoppers of Kingdom Come. Blue Light Special Aisle 15. You're dead! And then, in the most sadistic move of all, there's this one hostage he takes, and he says to him, "You're free.
Yeah.
Get out of here." And as the hostage is fleeing for his life.
No.
He gets
never
shot.
Never just run away from a gunman. You have to make it hard for them. It's difficult to aim your gun at the ground. So to hit the deck and crawl for your life. But this guy just keeps running, and he's a easy target, and he gets just blown to smithereens.
So the police are assembled outside. They don't know what to do. What's going on here? They utter the immortal line, "Call the Cobra!"
Yeah, don't call Denzel Washington for any sort of hostage negotiations. No, you call the Cobra. This is the guy who's no talk, all action.
Yeah.
He's the guy who's kicking ass, taking names. He's chewing on a matchstick and wearing aviators. He is there to blow bad guys to bits.
Well, basically, he's part of what's known in this film as the zombie squad.
They never really explain because of his acting. Yeah,
no, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in this movie, his acting is a little somnambulistic. I'm dead, yes, but they never explain what the zombie squad is, except for the fact that they do things that nobody else should or could do.
Yes.
So he pulls up in his Cobra Mobile. I mean, you describe the Cobra Mobile.
I thought it was some sort of, like, 1956, like, Studebaker that you would take your best girl to the sock hop in. I don't know why this guy's driving in this car, but,
with a license plate that reads, "Awesome."
Awesome.
And as the car pulls up, we see a denim-clad leg come out with a cowboy boot.
Cutting a figure of 5'7".
You got it. And this is our man. This is Marion Cobretti. Although at this point he's only known as Cobra. And he comes out.
Oh, I didn't even make the connection with his surname. Okay. No, I learned something new. All right, Cobretti is Cobra.
Yes, indeed. And he comes out and he's got the aviator shades. He's got the tight ass jeans. He's got the spray painted on. He's got the
musculature.
And he's got the sort of 80s kind of Stallone
font. Pompadour, yeah.
And he's ready to kick some ass and take some names. So he goes in there covertly, stealthily. And at this point, the product placement is rampant. I mean, we're seeing fucking Pepsi, 7-Up, Rice-A-Roni.
Yeah.
Well, yes, because at one point, our man Cobra, he grabs a Coors Light, a nice, tall, refreshing beverage. And, you know, takes a few swigs, which I respect. Throws the can to create a diversion, the dirt bag, because they're always dirt bags, right?
Yes.
The dirt bag shoots at that, and which gives Cobra enough of a diversion to then not kill the dirt bag, but to grab the store's intercom and say, "Hey, dirt bag, you're a lousy shot. And then we have our mano-a-mano with Cobra and
and the cowering hostages in the meat department, hiding behind the Hungarian salami,
which allows Cobra to then extract a knife
from his back pocket,
and throw it right into the guy's chest, amazing. And then shoot the shit out of him. So this establishes our hero right then and there. This is a man that does not follow any jurisprudence.
No, he literally takes no prisoners.
No, he takes no prisoners. I mean, he is basically the judge, jury, and executioner. And when he defuses the situation, and he blows away the bad guy, and the hostages are free, you would think he'd be hailed a hero. But no, he goes out, and the bling-hard liberal, which I sort of am, throng of media are, they're like, chastising this guy. Did he have to die? Did you have to do that?
Yeah, and this is interesting. This really puts it in a specific time and place, because this was the 80s. This was in the height of the crack epidemic in the U.S., which spurred all these rappers and accounts of how the inner cities had been deteriorating under Reaganomics and whatnot. But really, this... if this had happened now, no one would give two thoughts about it. Like if this guy was in Paris, in the market that was shot up, or in Bataclan, he would be hailed a hero. Right. Again, this guy, he took the law into his own hands, and again...
He is the law.
Although he is at loggerheads with his superior.
Yes. And so Cobra grabs reporter by the scruff of the neck, pulls back the sheet on the bottom bag, and says something along the lines of, "Is this man allowed to tell his family that he can't come home alive?"
That'll learn you.
So this establishes our character. Now we get to what I consider to be probably one of my absolute favorite 5-minute sequence in the entire history of cinema. Okay?
Yeah, this is really, really bizarre.
Because after a hard day's night of work, Cobra goes home. Now, he's driving his Studebaker, and he needs to find a parking spot. It's a parallel park. I mean, it's not easy to fit such a large vehicle. And so there's a bunch of like Latino gangbangers hanging outside his apartment, just sitting there listening to Latino gangbanger music. Meanwhile, in the soundtrack, we got like a Donna Summer wannabe singing, working so hard, trying to make a living. Cobra decides that his parking spot is where he wants to park his car. Yeah. He's fucking Cobra. He's going to park his car where he wants. So he just bumps the Latino... Yeah.
Parallel parking here. No, he plows right into this gangbanger's car.
Yeah.
Pushes him forward like 10 meters. And this leads to a confrontation.
Yes.
Where
the Latino gangbanger goes, "Hey, essay, what are you doing, man?"
Yeah, always with the essay.
Yes, of course. And then he's smoking a cigarette, right? So Cobra goes, "It's bad for your health." And then the gang member goes,
"Bad for your health."
You sound more like Seagal than Stallone, but anyway. And the gang member goes, "What is Pinchy? Why is it called Pinchy?
Pinche?
Pinche, yeah.
Yeah, Pinche. I don't know what that is."
And then Cobra goes, "Me, clean up your act." And for no reason whatsoever, he grabs the guy's wife beater tank top and just tears the front away and then walks into his apartment. Okay, that's absurd enough.
Yeah, then, with that example of braggadocio and just sheer impudence that he would do this in front of these four guys, maybe they're just so stunned they just couldn't retaliate.
They couldn't.
Four against one, they would just go give this, 30-something white guy just a beatdown in the middle of Wilshire Boulevard, where the hell this was.
No.
They cower.
They shouted out some more essays exams and whatever.
Pinches and pendejos and other stereotypes.
And then, having found his parking spot, our Cobra then walks towards his apartment reading a newspaper. And for no reason whatsoever, there's just a random barbecue there. It's not a propane barbecue. It's one of those old Weber barbecues. Yes. He lifts up the lid, takes a newspaper, and just tosses it in the barbecue. Why? Who the fuck knows? He walks into his apartment. He opens up his refrigerator. He takes out two things, a pizza box and a carton of eggs. He opens a pizza box. There's one slice of pizza inside the box. Cobra's got a light appetite.
He takes a pair of scissors and halves the slice.
He halves the slice. What did Cobra... This is the man. He just came back from like putting, like destroying a hostage taker. Wouldn't he have a bit of like? Wouldn't he want to have a whole slice of pizza? No, he takes a little piece, cuts it off, eats it, opens up the egg carton where his gun cleaning apparatus there, and cleans his gun. It's glorious. It's glorious scene. I fucking love it. Anyway, getting back to the plot. This we have this killer in the large. Well, they think it's a killer, but it's really a killers. It's a night slasher. The night slasher.
And talk about an ineffectual police force. Their forensics team is not able to discern whether the killings that have been taking place in L.A. have been perpetrated by one sole knife-wielding slash gun-wielding assailant, or whether it's been a multitude of assailants. And Cobretti is able to discern immediately that it's an army. And these guys are so dismissive of him.
Like, I don't believe this army theory. No. You're just a hothead. And that's why you're on the zombie squad. Yeah. But meanwhile, they're responsible for 16 murders, including a businessman, an Asian immigrant.
They're reporting all this stuff on the news for exposition, of course. Yeah. The Asian immigrants. And
so eventually, Cobra's path crosses with a beautiful, leggy Danish model played by one Brigitte Nielsen, who at the time was married to Sylvester Stallone. And how their paths cross is that she was witness to one of the night slasher murders. She was with some guy after a mall shoot. And you were saying about in every canon movie,
there's always really one inexplicably
incongruous scene.
Wildly off the mark. And in this one, we're introduced to Brigitte Nielsen's character, who's in some sort of fashion shoot, posing a la Zoolander with these with robots for some reason.
And she's wearing the skimpiest of bathing suits, and it's pretty, you know. I mean,
yeah, and Globus and Golan.
Yeah,
obviously their sensibilities are so out of whack and out of touch with the popular American culture that they just.
But they were so wrong; they were right.
Sort of. Yeah, but they just figured probably that this movie needs robots, and this movie needs
sex appeal.
Sex appeal. Yeah.
We got the Nielsen woman. Put her in the bathing suit. Shoot the pictures. Yeah. It makes the picture great.
Yes.
So, anyhow, she narrowly survives an attack by the Night Stalkers. By the groups.
Yeah.
Because they're really the New World. And what their mandate is, it's never explained. They're not ISIS.
They have no real purpose.
They're almost like anarchists. They just want to cut. Yeah. Well, not really anarchists because in that sense, because the true definition of an anarchist is they want to overthrow the government, right? They don't want government. They just want to cause shit.
True.
They're just there to propel the plot forward.
Yeah.
That's the end of that. Okay.
Sure, why not?
So, the next step, of course, is to keep Brigitte Nielsen's character, I don't even know her name,
no,
safe.
No, I don't either. Yeah.
And they have her, she's in a hospital, and the chief Night Stalker then goes and they try and kill her, but Cobra rescues her at the nick of time, which leads to an incredible car chase. Fucking awesome.
We were talking about Bullet, Steve McQueen, and Ronin, the awesome De Niro movie, and this was a neat car chase.
Oh yeah, because every
complete with this like 50s jalopy, like Studebaker, roaming through the streets of L.A., and we were saying, oh, this should have been San Francisco, because at least you'd have a little bit of geographic topography over which you could have these cars like sail through the air.
But they did have some.
They did have some of that. Yeah,
and the other thing too is we have at one point the Cobra mobile kind of goes on, you know, does this like
this pirouette kind of.
So it's driving clips backwards.
Yes.
And meanwhile, Cobra's shooting through the window, driving backwards. How much more badass awesome can you get than that, dude? That is like the epitome of badassness, okay?
Yeah, and flying through the air and hitting the overhead street sign.
Oh, my
just
Lord.
Amazing.
Glorious.
What a chase.
Glorious. Did we mention who Cobra's partner is? We did not.
Yes, anyone who's a fan of Seinfeld.
Renee Santorini. You may not know the name, but you know the face. This is
the proprietor of an Italian trattoria, Poppy.
Poppy! Yeah. Poppy is his fucking partner!
The man whose, personal hygiene wasn't up to snuff. So
Poppy's a little sloppy.
Yeah. So that Seinfeld was reticent to dine in his establishment because he did not wash his hands. Anyway, Poppy is a copy, so to speak, who wears a fisherman's cap, and his Cobra is a right-hand man.
Mm-hmm. So now, okay, so at this point, it's determined that Brigitte Nielsen is in mortal peril, so she needs to be taken to a safe house somewhere, and Cobretti is conscripted along with Poppy and some other chick to escort her to a foundry town.
Yeah.
That's where they have a foundry.
Yeah, what is an iron ore where they heat metals to melt them down to create aluminum. I don't know the technicalities behind it, but yeah, yeah. It's essentially an excuse to film a wild shootout in a factory.
Right, before we get there, So he's got to take her to the safe house and, you know, keep her safe from the new order. But before
that, they're getting a little peckish.
Yeah, well, before, I mean, we got to stop for a little romance, a little romantic subplot. Yeah. So we got to, you know, all of a sudden we have to see the charming side of Cobra. So they're at this diner, and Stallone, I mean, this film is full of non-sequiturs. It's just bizarre as all fuck. Anyway, he comes by with this gigantic plastic hamburger to Brigitte Nielsen and says, "Your entree is ready." Yeah. That's a cue, man. Say it.
Oh, your entree is ready. Yeah, I'm getting a little better with this.
You're getting better. Meanwhile, Brigitte Nielsen is covering her french fries with ketchup. And, of course, there's a wonderful close-up of those french fries. And Stallone says, "You need a life preserver?"
"Hey, you need a life preserver? Those fries are drowning."
And then, as they're you know, have their romantic banter. I mean, this is not, you know, Preston Sturgis. She goes, "What do you do to relax?" And he says, "Look for trouble."
Mm-hmm. And trouble's found him.
Trouble has found him because basically, at the end of it all.
Yeah,
it,
they're holed up in this flea bag motel, yeah. And the members of the New World, not to be confused with the New World Order, are hot on their tail. Mm-hmm.
Because
Rotor. they're you know, on their motorbikes, and they're wearing the full motorcycle regalia, and they're armed to the tits, mm-hmm. And they are on his tail, and looking to take these guys out.
We should mention that the female police officer who's in their group is a member of the New World. I mean, she rats them out.
Yes.
And, you know, discloses their location. So then they have to flee yet again, and they find themselves in one of these foundries, one of these iron smelting factories, and this is basically our big shoot 'em out.
Yeah, and just like RoboCop, where they had a big shootout in an abandoned factory in the mean streets of Detroit, this one is L.A. Who knew they had factories in L.A.?
Well, it's outside of L.A.
Okay, true enough.
Yeah, it's outside
of L.A. And this is the ultimate showdown between, I guess, 20 to 30 henchmen, New World henchmen, and their leader.
Yep.
Versus the indefatigable Cobretti.
So yeah, because Poppy was a little sloppy because he got taken out. So he's out of the picture. So now it's one man. It's a one-man army versus one the New World.
Yeah.
And never mind. This is the 1980s. This is Sylvester Stallone. This is a Canon production. One man is all you fucking need, okay?
Yep.
He takes out about 30 members of the New World.
And he says, "This is where the law stops and I start."
Well, yes.
And he really takes these guys out, and they're no match for him.
Yeah.
Just,
when it, yeah.
He's a sharpshooter. He's got some ridiculous... he's got personalized guns with a Cobra emblem, like a decal on them, and he's a sharpshooter, and he just means business.
He's a member of the Zombie Squad, man.
Of course.
That's it. I mean, he's Cobra. That's all you need to know.
That's all you need.
That's all the plot. Yeah. That's all the motivation you need to know. That's all the character development that needs to be elucidated. Yeah. He's Cobra, okay? It comes down to a mano-a-mano versus the lead Night Stalker versus our New World guy, played whatever, Night Stalker. Versus Cobra. And, you know,
and despite his claim that we are the hunters...
Yeah,
he's the hunter being hunted by Cobra.
Right, and I mean it's again, like, this is his 80s excess at its finest, because it's not enough for Cobra to put the guy on a fucking impale him on a hook.
No, it was like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where he takes the bad guy and just hoists him on top of a hook. Mm-hmm. But
and that's that would be enough. That would be enough.
I would have perished had my spinal cord been impaled on a hook. Mm-hmm. But that's not enough. He has to lower this guy into this foundry flame.
Mm-hmm. For him to burn to death in those flames. So
a lot like Joan of Arc or some shit.
Wait, can I actually get some sort of like, you know, highbrow illusions? This is Cobra, dude. I mean,
it's true, yeah.
Now, at this point, after single-handedly taking down the New World, Cobra is now being hailed as a hero. Good job, Cobra. Excellent stuff. You know, whatever, anything you want, we can do it for you.
I need a new car.
I want my car back. I want my car repaired.
That's not in the budget.
And even his nemesis, Superior, the one that says, I don't believe there's a group theory and so on.
Yeah, the guy who was poo-pooing his notion that there was more than one assailant and it was an army of assailants, and the guy who basically spent the whole movie in a trench coat and a raincoat, just sort of admonishing this heroic guy for what? I don't know.
So he
gets one right to the kiss.
Well, because he goes, good job, Cobra. I would have been a bit more subtle about it, but no hard feelings. Whereas our hero, Marion Cobra, goes, no hard feelings, extends his hand, and gives him one, bam, right in the kisser. Awesome. But that's okay, because that's a superior, but a superior goes, hey, Cobra, you want to live back to L.A.? No, thank you. I got my own transportation. And away goes into the sunset with Brigitte Nielsen.
Yeah.
And the birds are singing, and the sun is shining, and they all live happily ever after. And this movie is fucking glorious,
friend.
This was meant to be a franchise. This was meant to be... You know, there, a sequel was of course, I can't, that's what they always did. They always had a movie in development, and they were writing the sequel. Unfortunately, when this movie came out in 86, I mean, it was dark. This is a dark, violent movie. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Rambo, First Blood Part 2, which was released in, I believe, 85, it was violent as all hell, but it was campy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rocky IV was... released at the tail end of 85, so it was sort of 85, 86. It was entertaining as all fuck. I mean, it was. It's not the best Rocky film, but it's the most entertaining Rocky film. It was cartoony. This was a dark movie. And
yeah, there's one scene where this yuppie in an underground parking garage gets sliced in half, and another guy gets run into a wall by a runaway van. And That was pretty intense stuff.
Mm-hmm. So despite the overabundance of machismo and Stallone kick-ass one-liners, like, you have the right to remain silent as he burns the guy to death.
Yeah.
What the fuck? The guy's gonna
ironically. Ironically, as the guy's screaming as one would if you're being burned to death.
This film only grossed $46 million at the box office on a $12 million budget. Now, it was profitable, but when you consider the fact that the last Rambo installment and Rocky installment was made, you know, 200 million.
Yeah.
It was considered a bit of a flop. So that was the end of The Adventures of Marion Cobretti. I would love to see a reboot, man. Do like a sort of like a Mad Max Fury Road and just reboot the shit out of this thing.
Yeah, why not?
Let's get Marion Cobretti back in action. Because you know what? Crime still is the disease. And we need a cure.
And it's ironic that at the time they probably... Well, not probably, but this vigilanteism, whatever you want to call it, this rogue policing, it was not warranted. But now when you have ISIS, maybe it is warranted because you have the shooting in San Bernardino where you could use a guy who's this, you know, adept at arms and killing, or he could step in immediately, not in the middle of a crack epidemic war zone like LA at the time.
But you keep saying you
need it.
You keep saying like in this climate and, you know, with ISIS and so on and so forth, and I agree with you with that one. But on the other hand, we have police under the utmost of scrutiny, way more so than before.
Yeah, body cameras
where anytime a police does anything, everyone's pulling out their iPhones to record it, saying police brutality. You know, I don't want to get too into the politics of it all because, again, I'm quite liberal and I do believe that, you know, police do overstep their boundaries. But it's so funny because, I mean, although I am a liberal, you know, the movies that I love are so against everything I believe in politically. Like, I do not believe in a cop. Like in real life, if there was a cop like Dirty Harry or Marion Cobretti or
Yeah, right to a fair trial.
Yeah, exactly.
As we've seen with Abu Ghraib, it underscores our democracy, that underpins our democracy, that you need to have this fundamental right. Whereas as Cobra admonishes this reporter for calling him out, says, you know, hey, you know.
a real life Paul Kersey I would not approve of, but when I watch it on my television set, or, you know, Death Wish, I'm fucking all for it, man. And, you know.
I guess because Death Wish... He becomes a little bit too enamored with his own power, and you could accept sort of a civilian in the heat of the moment taking the law into his own hands and saving the day. But then toward the end of five Death Wish films,
yeah.
he's becoming less Bernard Goetz and more he's turning into, you know, Commando or something. Well, the body count is so insane.
Wait till we do our Death Wish 3 podcast. That is another can of production, which is fucking glorious. So
yes,
we'll get more into this whole vigilante talk a bit, you know, in a future date. But for the time being, I'm going to ask you, what did you learn from Cobra?
I learned that, you know, times change, sensibilities change, and one of the early montages in the film is set against the backdrop of the incredibly ironic tune of Angels in the City. There's this montage of Stallone who's trying to get the lowdown on what's happening with this gang, and he's interviewing sort of the demi-monde, the scum of the city, and he's talking to drag queens and hookers, and he goes into a tattoo parlor, and the tattoo parlor is supposed to be, oh, that's where all the badasses hang out, and the guy's got the slick back hair. Right now, tattoos have become so de rigueur that everyone has one. Yeah, you had yours way before anyone did, but this is supposed to be the baddest of the badass. And meanwhile, you can't, you know, swing a dead cat in the city of Toronto without hitting a tattoo parlor. Mm-hmm. So that was hilarious. But yeah, this guy's trying to suss out who the bad guys are, and he goes to find the baddest of the bad. Got to talk to the giant 6'3". Black tranny hooker. Well, she knows what it's all about. What did you learn?
I learned that watching Sylvester Stallone play with a bobblehead and looking at...
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
It was incredible.
Were bobbleheads like the newest thing in 1986? I mean, it never existed before because he's looking at this thing. And
bobbleheads make me laugh all the time.
And as the bobblehead is bobbling, so is Stallone's head. And then he hands back the item to the merchant and goes, hot item. That was the height of entertainment.
That was hilarious.
This movie is just full of entertainment, man. Mm-hmm. It's chock-a-block, full of everything you want in a film. I give it 4 stars.
Yeah, me too. Just absolutely hilarious. And I want to usher in this era of badassery as well, because we were talking about it earlier, how everything's become so anodyne and so PC, mm-hmm. where you have James Bond, the ultimate womanizer, who has succumbed to PC pressure to have a love interest who's his age. And
you talk about Inspector with Monica
Inspector,
Bellucci.
Yeah. Where,
Monica
where
Bellucci
he
can't, is gorgeous, man. I
yeah,
mean,
she
I don't
is
care
gorgeous,
ever...
but he's been pressured due to, you know, the prevailing winds of
King?
PC shame culture that he can't possibly be a guy who's so good-looking.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking Daniel Craig. He's so good looking, he could get a 20-year-old who would fuck him. Undoubtedly, but of course, and,
okay,
you know.
But I mean, in all fairness, it was getting a little bit extreme when you had Entrapment, you had Sean Connery with Catherine Zeta-Jones. I mean,
that was true. Okay, yeah, where the spread has been a little too much age-wise, but still, mm-hmm. it's there's something to be said about a movie that's so unabashedly un-PC, where a guy takes the law into his own hands, where the body count rivals any of the Rambo movies, where just the henchmen are just laid waste to without uttering a single line of dialogue. There's something to be said for that. I want this era to return. Because they're always couching it. They're always having caveats. There's always some sort of...
qualification?
Yeah, a qualifier for why this guy can't just shoot, as you said before, like gangbangers willy-nilly. And you know, the lawyer in this one is a perfect example of that. You can't just take the law into your own hands. Yes, you bloody well can. This is an action film. Bad guys are there to be...
They're fodder.
Part of the body cannon. They're fodder. Yeah, they're cannon fodder.
And when you said...
Cannon fodder, literally.
When you mentioned, why does he say you have the right to remain silent before he burns the guy to death? And guys, I said, because he's judge, jury, and executioner, i.e. he's commenting on the fact that he yeah. is. So,
this
I mean...
This is true, yeah.
this is all part of the, you know, the subtext that, you know, Cosmatos and the cannon boys want to put into Cobra.
Yeah, this is true.
And also, you know, the amazing thing about Cobra, too, is that... you know, one of our great contemporary directors, Nicholas Winding Refn, who directed Drive, is a huge fan of Cobra. In Drive, Ryan Gosling, always chewing on the toothpick, was a direct homage to Cobretti chewing on the matchstick. So, I mean, this movie is influential. And, yes, I mean, this hyper-machismo, anti-PC, what have you, I mean, this sort of cinema has lost the ages, unfortunately. I mean, we're not going to be able to, you know... People watch it now. If they would play this movie now, let's say they're at a repertory cinema, they'd have to have 8 trigger warnings beforehand. You
yeah.
know what?
Yeah.
Fuck that, man.
Yeah.
Just enjoy it for what it was. Enjoy it for what it is. You know, it's movies, it's cinema, it's escapism. It takes us away. It's glorious. It's incredible. Sylvester Stallone is a man amongst... No, he's a god amongst men.
Yeah.
I love you, Stallone. I always will. And Cobra, may he reign...
Supreme.
Yeah. And maybe even yet again, because I would love to see a reboot of this film.
For sure. And for more, check out www.reallyawfulmovies.com. We're part of Eli Roth's Crypt TV family. And check out our Twitter handle, awful_movies. Let us know what your favorite rogue cop or vigilante movie is. We can take a guess. Probably the Lithuanian Sensation. Death Wish, Charles Bronson. But if you have another one of our favorites is The Demolisher. Let us know. reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.